Good morning. Glad you're here, and welcome to what used to be the Spiritual Growth Workshop, now the Equipped, and my presentation, the first of two. We have another class tomorrow afternoon about singles ministry in Churches of Christ or in your community. The big thing that I want to emphasize, every church should minister to singles. For years, this class was why every church should have a singles ministry. And what happened for years, churches believed that all of you wanted a classroom down a long dark hall away from everyone else so you could have your own thing, a singles ministry. Well, that is not going to work. It worked poorly when it actually had any success. But what churches have to do is minister to single people. There's a lot of reasons why, but we have to start with how to be effective. And the biggest church, and we are the church, the people, right? Church in the building, it's us, right? The biggest shortcoming we as a people have done in singles ministry is we haven't done the Great Commission very well. You know, let me read to you. From Matthew 28:19, therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now, the model kind of works. Our ministers baptize 5 or 10, maybe 15 people a year at our congregations. So they do what we pay them to do, right? They do a sermon and they do a little baptizing here and there. And we talk about baptism a lot. If you ever get on a chat room or anything like a singles chat room or whatever, the Church of Christ people are serious about talking about baptism. We just don't baptize a lot of people. And we have two problems as individuals, two shortcomings. One is we don't like to go. See, the first part of the command is to go to the world. And the world is everybody outside of your living room. You know, you got to get out of the house and get into the community. And secondly, we don't make disciples. I remember when I was in high school, we had a movement at our little church in Fort Deposit, Alabama. And I was in a new high school, and 3 or 4 of the kids came, and they told me I was going to hell. Hey, how you doing? What's your name? You're going to hell. Okay. That got my attention. I was going to hell. I was raised Baptist father, Methodist mother. We went to church. And so I was first offended and then second intrigued. And so, do you want to do a Bible study? Great. So I studied the Bible. I was invited to a devotional on Friday night. A bunch of high school kids. The singing was great. They used their Bible. And I got baptized. And then the little group went off and found the next person. And the first Sunday I was at church service, I served communion. And so there you are. I didn't get mentoring in the church until I was in my 30s. I had fallen away for 12 years and had just a very destructive history of a life. And I went back to church. And one of the elders down at Sunset in Miami took me, kind of put his arm around my shoulder and says, we're going to get through this. Let's be friends and work with what we have. I was divorced. I was a single parent. And incidentally, we had just had Hurricane Andrew. So, I didn't go to church, but I wanted to do something for the community. So I volunteered to do hurricane relief. And that's how I started making friends. And those friends mentored me and spent time and taught and encouraged and would not let me go until I moved away. And I found encouragement as I went along. So we need more than a simple conversion experience. We need a lifetime of encouragement and mentoring. So I don't have my clicker. I didn't know I was supposed to bring a clicker, so that's not going to work. Let's try that. There we go. Now, our theme this year up in Tallahassee, we do an annual retreat or conference in Florida, and our theme this year was What's Love Got to Do with It? So just to read a couple of verses since we had it, and what's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? Who needs a heart when a heart can't be broken or can be broken? Sort of negative, Tina Turner. And we both know that I'm not what you need, but I will always love you, Whitney Houston. That sounds fabulous. That sounds depressing. Reality in life is, James Taylor, the great prophet, said, I don't want to be lonely tonight. You know, a lot of us find ourselves as unmarried people, we're lonely. And sometimes, you know, we hang out with people that aren't really the best people to hang out with because nobody better is, you know, in they're just not there. The sound of someone promising they will never go. Now, if you've ever been dumped, you know that at some point that person promised you they would never go. I'll be with you forever or till Tuesday is what that means. So what is love? Well, we know that love is this. You see, is how much God loved the world, enough to give His only special Son so that everybody who believes in Him should not be lost, but should share in the life of God's new eternal age. John 3:16. I threw a little different version up there because sometimes we hear the same John 3:16, and after the first three or four words, we know it so well, we kind of go on pause with it. God loved us so much that He couldn't stand to lose us, and He sent Jesus. And so that's what love is, not who's going to be there next Tuesday, but what is there for us forever. Now, on singles, what if I told you, how many of you know that you're the majority? I'm looking at a smaller, Benita knows because she's heard my presentation too. Small attendance. You're the majority. 52% of Americans are single. The family that you see on television, mom, dad, and the kids, and the older shows, not the new shows, but the older shows, mom, dad, and the kids, is a thing of the past. It's the small amount of reality. Most families today are mom and the four kids, or dad and the three kids, or mom and some kids, or mom and dad, or two dads, or this or that. Our society is not the nuclear family as we know it. 52% of people in the U.S. are single, and that's rising. The lesson tomorrow we're going to look at in depth some of the surveys and the trends of how marriage is going in the country and why people prefer to stay single. All right, 40% of children in the U.S. are born to unmarried parents. Did you know that? 4 out of 10 to a single mother. In Pensacola, it's 55%. More single mothers have children than married mothers. And again, it's rising. We also have the largest amount of single fathers with custody in the country in Pensacola, and that's probably because of the Navy base and how many people were related with the government that are there. 50% of your children, when you send them off to college, they'll quit going to church. It could be higher. Another statistic that'll pop up later, and I didn't change it, I just said, well, we're going to talk about it. Says 60%. So even if you can take your kids from the cradle roll through high school in the youth group and send them off to college, half of them are going to quit church. And then 30% of adults younger than 30 will never marry. 3 out of 10 will never get married. And what we'll talk about tomorrow, only 29% of men under the age of 30 think that they'll ever get married. Less than 3 out of 10 even want to get married. You know, when I was growing up, I assumed one day that I would get married. But the younger crowd, they're not even assuming that's going to happen. It's not important to them. 50% of people in our country also state that nobody invites them to church. Now, we're the church. So inviting them to church doesn't necessarily mean they have to come to the church building. There are other things that we can do. And we have to get out of our own box to make a difference for them. All right, so if 52% of the population is single, let's just do a little quick, easy math. Single people are 52% in the community. 15% of them attend church regularly. Therefore, the 48% minority makes up 85% of the people in church. How many of you attend a church congregation where there's only a few single people? Okay. Yet, you're the majority, 52%. Now ask a deeper question. We all have friends who go to the Baptist church, Methodist church, Catholic church, or whatever. How many single people in those congregations or those denominations are the majority? They're not. Because nobody, it seems, has figured out that single people need a church home. You're supposed to be married. Mom, dad, and 2.2 kids. It's called the Saddlebrook Method of Church Evangelism. And Rick Warren and Saddleback, yes. They have grown prolifically. You know, thousands and thousands of growth. And most of the mega churches use the same model. If you go to a large church, you'll notice everybody kind of looks the same. Which is tragic because we are not supposed to segregate ourselves with people just like us. And yet church leadership says, we want couples. Couples are easier. See, now if you're single, you're problematic, but if you get married next week, you automatically become a good citizen and a good candidate for church. Which makes no sense because we basically are the same person in our heart and our spirit when we're single that we are when we're married, correct? But churches go for married couples. Now, statistics prove it. We went back to the Great Commission. Go to the world. The world is everybody out there. And also, Galatians 3:26-28 ends, there are no longer Jews or Greeks, slaves or free, males or female. You are all one. Well, also, how about married and unmarried? When we meet someone, and I do, I am blessed at work. It may surprise you, I work for the government, and I work with the homeless program. There are rules, they tell you don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics, don't do this, that. But they really don't care as long as it doesn't affect, you know, the big picture. So I have great opportunity to talk to my clients. We pray together. I ask them about their life, what's going on. And, you know, how are you religiously? I have one guy who's very proud of being an atheist. He has told me repeatedly, Jim, I'm an atheist. I'm like, okay. He says, but if you want to pray for me, you can do that because I'll take all the help I can get. So you don't know the opportunities that come. But what I don't do to him is say, listen, you're a single guy. You're different. Jesus doesn't have anything to offer you. What I do is talk about what Jesus has done in my life. He says, I'm an atheist. I don't believe that stuff. Well, let me tell you about what happened in my life. And I tell him my story. And then I say, I'll pray for you. If you're married, I'll still pray for you. It's okay. You know, you should treat people as equally as you can because Jesus is there for everybody equally. All right, church people, where is your church budget and time go? And I tell you this stuff because I want you to go ask your ministers and your elders. And I want you aware, and most of us are very informed in Churches of Christ. You know, we have a wonderful system at our church, Gateway in Pensacola, on our budget. They put it on a piece of paper behind a glass, and our budget is right there. And we see where our money goes. And we have a right to ask and say, hey, how are you spending our money? You know, I put money in the plate. Where does it go? Oh, well, it goes on a trip to Lithuania for the, you know, mission trip. Or it goes for this, these children. Or it goes, well, let me tell you where it goes, according to experts. Your budget, the blue is for families. Remember mom, dad, and the 2.2 kids and a dog. And dogs can come to church now. We had one. He growled. Made people nervous, but he was there. The gold is the building. And the singles are the less than 1%, which is this little group here. That's where your money goes. And I show you this because of budgets. And to let you know where the priorities are. And until you ask your ministers who are married and your elders who are married for help and for support, they're not really going to see you and know to put that time and money into you and into your community and other singles. Now, again, back to where do we lose members? Well, we lose half of our kids before they graduate high school. I said another 50 to 60% leave during college, and as many as 90% of people quit going to church regularly after a divorce. 90%. So we are, as churches, in the church growth business. We're supposed to take the gospel and grow, correct? And yet we're like a colander, you know, that you cook with. You put the spaghetti in there and all the water runs out the bottom. We have a lot of hemorrhage of people. A lot of people are leaving, and we have to figure out what the plan is. What we're doing isn't working. More songs. And then where do we convert people to church? We work with our family. I was proud to baptize my children. That's a great thing. And we have friends of other church members or our own friends. We bring a few to church, and we meet people at work, which is where I basically live because I'm there all the time, it seems like. So that's where we meet and teach people about Jesus. We use church, married couples and enrichment class, that kind of thing, and weddings and funerals. Let me tell you, a wedding is the best advertisement for your church congregation to the public that you can get for free. If someone gets married at your building, volunteer as single people and jump in there and make it the best experience for those visitors that they've ever had. And a funeral is almost as good. You know, make people feel they're loved and that they're welcome. Children, VBS is wonderful. If you don't have a good VBS, you're missing out. When I was in New Jersey at the Milmay Church, we had 100% participation of the grown-ups at VBS. Preacher said, if you want VBS, you can do VBS, but everybody has to work. Everybody. We had 110 people attended, a little church that had been built and planted 12 years before. We had 100 people who attended, and we had 300 kids. And they converted from the community 10 people a year, and the church grows that little 10 or 12% every year because of VBS, Easter program, and Christmas. That's the three times people visit your church, VBS, Easter, Christmas. Okay, moving along, and singles outreach. Now, what can you do for singles? You do divorce care and recovery. Quickly, we talk about positives. You invite people from the community. How many of you know somebody who's divorced? And how many of you know somebody who's not happy about it? Divorce care is a wonderful opportunity to touch a life. But don't invite someone to your church building just to go to a divorce care class. Invite them to go with you. Say, look, I want you to do this class. I want to invite you, but I'll come sit with you the first time or two. Get involved with them. It's It's a place of healing, a place to belong, and it's a place of free group therapy. Everybody in a divorce care class has a lot of the same pains. The negatives are there's minimal church involvement with support groups. You can come in the back door, do your support group, and leave without any involvement with the church. Chronic grief. There are people who will go to divorce recovery support groups, and they've been mourning for 20 years, and they've been miserable for 20 years, and they will be miserable for 20 more years, and they kind of live in it. And if they get in a group therapy, they can drag down that group if the leader isn't strong and can redirect. So most don't attend church after a session is complete because they don't meet anybody who goes to that church. And that's why I say it's important for us as Christians to invite people to participate in activities, but to go with them. Now, the divorce people, you know, if you're divorced, you get a little extra scrutiny at church. Yes?
We go to a very large church. No such thing as divorce care. That doesn't exist, and it probably never will. So, I mean, how do you get one? I know the Baptist church has one in town.
Well, you are the core and the key. If single people in churches of Christ don't ask their leaders for things that they need, nothing will ever change because your ministers are married. They and their wives have been married for 30, 40 years. Your elders have been married forever. They're not living that divorce. They're not living that different life. And they really feed into and believe that Saddleback model where it's mom, dad, and the kids. It's what churches want, and it's what they believe is right, but it takes the people who are actually going through a divorce recovery, the people who have lost a spouse at a young age, the people who are just out of college and just don't fit anymore. Those are the people who have to speak up and say, hey, I need something. And if they don't listen to you, then the church can never grow because there's more than just you. There's 52% of the population that's like you. But you have to bring it to their attention because that's not their focus. And you're right, the Baptists have divorce care. Yes.
The first time I spoke, I went because I was not raised in the Church of Christ. I was raised Catholic, and came to the church later, about 12 years ago. So I can remember just kind of testing the waters a little bit, and I went and I spoke with one member to ask him advice, and I was told to do the divorce stuff in secret.
Well,
I was very uncomfortable with that, so I went to one of the elders and was able to share that and say, I can't function that way. I respect the eldership too much. And fortunately, he was very open-minded about it. But I think there's a lot of stigma, and until we can break that down,
nothing changes.
And so, yes, I was able to speak up to my elder.
Right. Well, we have to speak up, and you can't deal with everything in secret. I'm very, of course, remarried and very vocal with my leadership, and they still don't listen much. So I'll tell you a couple of things we do besides that. I've been 21 years, I do an unbudgeted, somebody gave me $25 once. I mean, honestly, the only payment I've ever had in 21 years was a $25. Here's a check for gas for what you do. And other than that, you guys, the singles, pay for your conferences. we get together and we do things. So we accomplish things kind of with the church's blessing, but without their help. In other words, they let us do it.
Yes. Do you have a conference for older singles?
We do a conference for singles, and we don't do it for young or old, because I tell you what, multi-generational relationships are the only thing that's going to save the church. If the young people, the middle-aged people, and the older people cannot get along, we're going to fail as a church anyway. Well, on your flyer, yes, we are planning for this year's conference, and it'll be in Eustis at Central. And so we're working on that. And here's my card. Yeah. So, okay, let me roll through this. But y'all can grab me anytime. You have my cards, my email. You can talk to me. Don't call me 3 a.m. But other than that, anytime. Somebody did that. That's why I said that. Okay, so back up here. Are you divorced for the right reason? Not everybody is. You know, first of all. Second of all, are you divorced for the wrong reason? How many people out there are just scoundrels when they're younger, but then they get it together older and they become good family people, and yet the church hasn't accepted them? Do we have a scriptural divorce? Well, maybe we should ask if we have a scriptural marriage. A lot of people get married for some really bizarre reasons or to the wrong people because they're lonely. A friend of mine went to Harding, and he said at Harding, if you were not married by the time you graduated, you were almost looked down upon. And so the last week he was there, he got married. And they had a disastrous marriage and a divorce. So a lot of time, Christian colleges push people into relationships faster than they should be because of church, yes?
I've been to 3 different Christian colleges. Columbia, I graduated from Abilene Christian, and I went to Pepperdine, did a master's degree. The colleges don't push it, it's the kids that push it.
Is it?
The girls all celebrate if somebody comes out with an engagement ring. Oh, we have a big party. Oh, how wonderful, that's exciting. The girls more than the boys. The boys usually try to stay out of it, but the girls are keen on finding a date that
right.
So
yeah.
It's really not the college, it is actually the kids.
Well, of course.
I taught at University of South Florida.
Okay.
For 5 years. Same thing there. The deal was, though, the boys and the girls were not Christian, the girls were very interested in marriage, but the boys were interested in living together, so that worked better than, you know,
right,
pushing too far. Maybe one day they'll marry me. So they live together. That is the difference.
Right. Yeah,
Christian colleges, they're Christian. And the kids come from Christian homes.
Right. So there's a lot of pressure to do it right.
So I said to my son, listen, when you get to Abilene Christian, I want to tell you something. All the girls are keen on finding a Christian husband. But don't even think about it. Do not give it a thought until you get to more like 30, because maybe you'll have it more together than you did at 22.
Yeah.
So finally he said, Mom, listen, I met this girl at ACU 5 years ago. Would you mind if I marry her now?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Good.
But it's really the girl.
Well, but again, it's that idea you got to do the right thing. I got married when I was 19, first time. And why? Because my minister, who was 24, I said, I'm lonely. I'd been to basic training. I was going off to, you know, with the Army. He says, well, get married. Well, 4 months later, I got married. And it was a disaster. So it wasn't good advice. So we worry about divorce, but we should start sooner about marriage. I started with my children when they were little children, teaching them that they don't need to be in bad relationships. So work on marriage, or, like the Bible teaches, work on being content as single people, and then if you do meet somebody, you're ready for a relationship. All right. Divorced people have different roles in congregations. Most churches of Christ don't hire divorced preachers, and I have attended congregations where a divorced man could not serve communion or lead prayer. Children always complicate financially and emotionally situation for the church family in a divorce. It's a lot of work to mentor and support people who have broken hearts. And but isn't that what we're there for in the first place? And then, as I said, economic situation. So, campus ministry, quickly, great stuff. Bonding, camaraderie, opportunity for spiritual growth, opportunity to meet a mate, balanced education. You get some church, you get some math, you get some science, hopefully. You know, better than getting some drinking and going to the beach every day. So campus ministries are great. I have great friends who do campus ministry. The negatives are that a lot of young adults are left out. I'll give you a fast story. We have a young lady who's very successful near Pensacola. She owns a beauty shop. She owns her house. She owns her car. She's debt-free. She loves Dave Ramsey, the financial guy. She follows his steps. She's knocked down gorgeous. And she got snobbed at our college and young professionals class because she doesn't have a college education. She dropped out of 16, dropped out of high school at 16, went, got her GED, went to school to become a beautician, and by 19 owned her business. But she wasn't good enough for the college ministry because she wasn't going to college. So we have to be very careful. A lot of people between the ages of 18 and 22 are not college students, and we'll leave them out with that ministry because they're a 19-year-old single mother, or they're a student at a VOTEC, or maybe they're in the Air Force, or maybe they just work at McDonald's. But they need church involvement and relationships just as much. Sometimes campus ministries play too much and don't pray enough. They really have a good time, and some of the kids love the good time, but they really don't get a lot out of it spiritually. As I said, a lot of people marry early, and sometimes educational demands can cause a neglect in their spiritual life. The widowed. How many of you know the age of the average widowed person in America? 57. 57 is a fairly young age when you look at activity today in a time when people live into their 80s. And so we have, for an average of 57, you have a lot of people who are widowed in their 20s and 30s. We have one of our ladies in Pensacola, her husband owned the business, the roofing business. He fell off the roof and hit his head and died. She was 28. And she had two kids. So now she's single, no support, did not have family locally, and children, and had to raise children. And she had chose to be a stay-at-home mom and had not went to college. So she had to go to college and get a skill and raise children. So there are a lot of younger widows and widowers, and churches do not have much to offer them. If you're older and you're widowed, you get about 2 weeks of nice dinners, and people feel bad for you, and you can go in the Young at Heart group if you're in a big church, and you have a little fellowship, but it's still not adequate, so it's still a big issue. So like I said, 2 weeks, and then get it together, get over it. One of the friends of mine was a youth minister, and his wife died young, and he lost his job, basically, because he was so miserable and sad that he couldn't minister to the kids, and so he had to go find another job. And how much more pain is that? All right, single parents. Let's face it, if you're a single parent, there are people who will ask you what is wrong with your life. What did you do wrong? You shouldn't have been out there messing around. You should have, didn't your mama raise you better? You know, we do that at church. I have a good friend who's the minister's daughter, and she was a single parent, and they told her they just couldn't believe that she grew up to be the kind of person she was. She actually had a husband, and he had overdosed and died, but she didn't talk about him, so they just assumed that she had children by herself, you know, as a single mother. So there's a lot of scrutiny of past mistakes. There's need for increased emotional support. As I said, if you have a mom and four kids, they need a lot of help. A lot more than we offer on Wednesday night. Think about it. How many of you have kids? Think about having four or five kids, three kids. You got to get them dressed, bathed, dressed, in the van, and to Wednesday night church. And then you get a nice lesson on communicating with your spouse. Or, you know, just pick a random lesson that we do sometimes. And you're like, I'm tired. And I still had to feed these kids and drive. I should have just stayed at home. We could have prayed together at the house. A lot of single parents would benefit if a church would offer a meal, something inexpensive, and a good class for those kids. You know, Wednesday night's not the time to cut back on the services. All right, yes.
I know in our congregation we have a couple of married ladies that function like single parents. Either the husband is not supportive of her attending church, so everything to get the kids there, she's 100% on her own, or the husband is just traveling all the time.
Right.
And so Sundays might be easier because he's usually home on the weekend, but she really struggled on Wednesday night with four kids, and she got judged more than she got offered help.
Yeah. Why aren't you here, you know, for class, right? I know, I see it all the time. All right, here's a key. Everybody isn't coupled up. Jesus never got married. He did okay, other than, you know, he had to die for our sins, but he lived a perfect life, correct? And the Apostle Paul lived life as a single man. So God never told us that we had to get married, and he didn't tell us it was better to be married than to be single. Now, he did notice with Adam that he didn't function very well without a companion, and he took care of that. But it's not a command for us to get married, and you don't have to be coupled up. Some people will not.
So basically, people who are not married need some kind of companionship.
Absolutely.
That's clearly there as a need.
Right.
So that's the way that we need to be looking. It doesn't need to be a companion in the opposite.
And church may be more important. I can tell you the truth. When I was a divorced single dad, church was more important for me every time the door opened, because I was heartbroken and I needed to belong as a single person. And we started the singles ministry. It was five really strange mixed up guys, and we started a ministry. Really, we had a telemarketer. I'm a RN. I was back in school. We had a young college student. We had a guy who was scared of his shadow who was a librarian, and we had a lawyer. Anytime you mix a lawyer in, it's always a strange mix. But we were the five that started, and we made a rule. Once a week we're going to get together, our Monday night adventures, and we're going to go do something together. We went to wrestling with one guy. He liked wrestling. So we went to a wrestling match. It wasn't Monday night, but we planned it. We went to the beach and took a dog. We went to a concert. We went to whatever, but we spent time together. And it grew. You know, we built a ministry out of our relationship's needs. Single people come in all ages and situations. You know, just because someone is not married, you just can't draw one little box and put everybody there.
What about that thing? How open are single people to the companionship of someone who's married? In other words, does it have to only be the singles that only have the family?
Well, yesterday on your paper there's a blog site, and then I have a friend who started a Launch Singles Facebook page, and it's a closed page. And somebody came on yesterday and says, I just don't understand why it's only the married people who post on here. You know, you people have been married forever. What do you think you have to offer me? You know, you've been married for 20 years. So not everybody necessarily is receptive to a married person kind of telling you what to do, which I don't, of course, because I'm... Right. But what we try to do is let you know that you are welcome in our church. You know what I mean? And that's not always the case. There are a lot of single people who don't feel that they fit in. Good married friends can help you tremendously. Matter of fact, Mike, who spoke before me, was saying at their congregation over in Titusville that they have several single ladies. How do you integrate them into the church? And I suggested that when they have, like, they do like dinner for eight and they have four couples, that they have three couples and invite two single people to sit in those other seats. And not a man and a woman. Don't set them up. But have a couple guys come to dinner, or have a couple ladies, you know, fill that spot with a couple of unmarried people, single people. Yes?
Okay. If I've heard this incorrectly, please correct me. But what I have been hearing you say is that this church doesn't have that, this church doesn't have that, this church doesn't do this, this church has nothing put in place. Other people in the church of couples kind of look down on people who become single for whatever reason. But I never hear a preacher tell the congregation what their responsibility is to single people, to people who are widowed. Yes, right at the time they do, but as time goes on. And the elders are supposed to be looking after their flock. And so it would appear to me that maybe to get something started, they need to start with the minister making everybody aware of, okay, now you really, you don't put people down. I mean, when you are
right.
First divorced or you're first widowed and you get put down, why? What happened? What did you do?
Yeah, it's,
you don't need.
It destroys you. Yeah.
And I just feel that it's,
You're hearing me. Now, here's a question. When was the last time anyone in this room, when was the last time you heard a sermon in a church service about why it's better to live a single life?
I haven't. Our preacher doesn't talk about things like that. It's basically his lessons are designed to just be in the Word and talk about it. Things out of the Old and New Testament. They're just in general.
Right.
But I can tell you, I lived in Europe for a long time. And I went to a retreat, women's retreat. And there were mostly younger women and a few older. But there are military women there, there are German women, Italian women, French women. But they were all English speakers in a castle on the Rhine. And an older woman was a wonderful lady from Holland. Had all these young women together in a circle, and the question was, what's the most difficult thing you've ever gone through? And I would say they're all between maybe 20 and 40, and most of them were saying, I was divorced recently, I'm about to be divorced. There was all about divorce, which was extremely painful.
Yeah.
I was the very last one. All members of church. I said, well, all I can say is I've been divorced and I've been widowed. And divorce is by far the more difficult.
Right.
Simply because the person's alive.
Yeah. Well, you know, we pick a person to get married to, and then that person unpicks us, and it breaks your heart. Okay. Closing up, mission trips are a wonderful opportunity while you're single. And especially if you don't have children, of course. This is in Lithuania, and my daughter and I went with the mission trip, but most of the people there were single adults who went over to Lithuania and ministered. And the reason being single is you don't have other people who depend on your time and money. So if you're single and don't have children, it's a great opportunity for mission trips. If you have children and you can afford it, it's a great opportunity to spend with your children and teach them to serve others. So it's great to be single. Do things out of your box, like a mission trip. You can socialize. You can have fun. We went inner tubing up in near Lake City last year and just had a blast with a group. And it is. This isn't. This is the... something I found on the internet, but that's where we went. Itchinatuckney is never that big. It's too wide.
Yeah.
You could get a hobby. You know, I had a friend, and he was divorced, and he decided, I always wanted to be a pilot. And he had the time. He was in his 50s. He had the money, and he took flying lessons, and it was just a wonderful thing for him. So sometimes you can, you know, burn some of your time, your energy, take up a new interest, that kind of thing, when you're single, and something you can't do when you're married and you have to take care of a husband or wife and kids. Or sometimes when the kids grow up and leave the house, it's a great time to try something new. All right, serve others, make a difference. There's always opportunities. Find some of the other single folks and serve them.
Talking about what we should do.
Right.
The bottom line is, according to what here, should the churches minister to singles?
But we're the church. And yes, we're going to, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go back and tell our minister, look, we need to take care of single people. 52% of the population is single. They're not here. And then you talk to your elders. But I'm going to tell you that 98% of the time, that's not going to be their priority because they're not single. Then you are going to do something out of the box and extremely bizarre and start your own little ministry, and it's going to grow. And they're going to notice occasionally, and you'll make a difference for a few people.
That's very hard when you're first single. You are so first.
I know.
And it takes you sometimes years. And sometimes it's hard to come out of it.
I agree.
So yes, churches should do something. The elders should do something to help.
Right. And that's why I keep asking them to keep inviting me to keep talking, and why this class is always written up. This is a great class for ministers and elders.
I think you should have this for ministers and elders.
And it's hard to get them in here, you know. And they're all good guys, you know. I know all these guys. They're good guys. Well, you know, they got to listen. People have to listen. And if you're the majority, you should be able to be heard. So, let's close. And another class tomorrow, and we'll just try to take it a little deeper. But let's close with a word of prayer after a verse. Let everything that has breath praise the Lord. That's Psalms 150, verse 6. And here's more contact stuff. I do this as a layperson, as a volunteer, because I remember being alone and having a 6-year-old child. Bring your child to church during the summer when everybody else's kids are gone to camp and trying to fit in. And so I feel it, I see it, and we just keep having to work to make it better. And a lot of time we have to go outside the church building into the community to find the fellowship we want. And that's another challenge. We're going to talk a lot about that tomorrow. Will y'all pray with me? Father God, we thank you so much for the opportunity to come together to talk about living single and to talk about the church, both the corporate church and us as individuals, what we can do to support one another and serve one another. And Lord, help us to get strength from you, and help us to be encouragement to one another, and help us to encourage our leadership to do more for the community in this area. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you all. I appreciate all of your interaction and everything. And this is an ongoing challenge. Always will be.